The Six Pillars of Freedom on Freedom 970 KUFO AM Portland.
Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Portland, Oregon's longest-running financial show that has a financial advisor, estate planning attorney, and a CPA to answer your questions for free. If you'd like to call in and ask a question, this is your opportunity. You can call 800-990-0750. That's 990-0750. And again, the local number is 503-417-7626. Well, in studio with me this morning is my co-hosts, two of them, Carl Jepson with the Warren Allen Law Firm.
Good morning.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Stege with the Baker Coastal CPA Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And Kevin, I'm sure you're keeping the revenue department going by filing taxes and amendments and all those kind of good things.
Oh, we tend to do our share.
Yeah, we want to keep the government in money. That's right. We've got to keep them afloat. Well, listen, we talk a lot about investing, about taxes, and about law, but the show's really all about us being able to answer a question that you call in and ask us. So if you have a question you've been wanting to ask, hopefully you'll give us a call and give us an opportunity to ask it for you. I do want to mention that I did confirm this week that we will be having either Harry Dent or Rodney Johnson for the rest of the year. They'll be joining us on the third Saturday. And I confirmed that the third Saturday of every month, we'll have them live in studio with us via the phone. They're calling from Tampa, Florida, and we'll be here in beautiful, sunny Portland, Oregon. I do want to mention, too, that you can go to my website and you can sign up for their daily newsletter. And they've changed the name of it. It was Survive and Prosper, but it's now going to be called Economy and Markets Daily. And so if you want to get that free newsletter, you can either go to my website, pfgwm.com, or you can go to harrydent.com and sign up for it. It's free. And I know you guys get it. You get it in the...
And Harry and Rodney has a new book, and Harry has a book. And I think, are you still giving books? Are you?
Yeah, absolutely. If you do call in, I will give you a book from Harry Dent, his latest book. And I got to tell you, if you haven't read it, you need to. It's called The Demographic Cliff, How to Survive and Prosper in the Great Deflation of 2014 to 2019. And if I'm not mistaken, I believe we are in 2014. So
kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. Huh?
Yeah, kind of waiting for the shoe to drop. Or in this case, the other shoe. Well, listen, speaking about shoes dropping, I'm going to kind of give a little stock report here about what's going on in the economy. And everybody has their opinion. That's one of the great things about being in America. We have a lot of people who give their opinion on the news, and sometimes they try to make their opinion be fact. But you have to read between the lines. So always use your good common sense when you hear things talking, people talking, particularly on the markets and what's going on in the economy. Always use your own common sense to kind of way between the numbers here. But here's the actual numbers of the Dow Jones closed yesterday at 16,851. It was up again. However, for the week, it was down. So how do we stand on the Dow when we closed on the all-time high there of 10,907 before the last correction in the market? We were at 14,164.53. So from that time, 10,907, we're up 18.97%, or in 6 years and 8.5 months, that's a 2.83% return per year. If we go back on the Dow, back to 12/31/99, when I think the really the long-term bear market or secular market started, the Dow closed at 11,497. And since that time, we're only up 46.57 in 13 years and 5.5 months. And that's 3.46% per year. So that's not numbers that we really want to be thinking about as far as having a going economy. The S&P closed at 1960. Now, where do we stand on the S&P from 10907 at 1565? Well, it's 25.29% or up 3.77% per year. And here's where the S&P gets kind of ugly. If you go back to 1231.99, that period of time, which is a little over 14 years, well, 13 years and 6 months, it's only up 33.47 or 2.49% per year. Those are not exciting numbers. Also, oil closed at 105.74, gold closed. But the thing that concerns me is our manipulating of the funds in this country are really working as far as being able to hold interest rates down, because currently the 10-year bond rate is 2.53%. Historically, a very, very low rate. And, I mean, that's why you have low interest rates. Problem is, a lot of people can't qualify to get the loan because, for good reason, we've tightened up our lending requirements. And, there's money out there, but you got to be able to qualify to get it. So that's one of the major problems. I am going to, later in the show, I'm going to give a little teaser here, but when we get to the Knowledge Trust, I am going to share with you a letter I received in regards to the Social Security Fund. And if you know anybody who's on Social Security, anybody who's close to Social Security, you do not want to miss the last 15 minutes of our show, because we're going to have kind of an open discussion about that and about, are we really getting our money's worth for our government? And, of course, any of you have been listening to the show, no, I don't think we are. But I'm going to actually give you a letter that I got. And as a senior citizen myself, it makes my blood boil. So I'm going to give an opportunity here to expound on it, and you can expound on it too, and appreciate getting your calls. The other thing I want to bring up, since I've got a little bit of time here, and talking about the markets, I'm very concerned in this country when we have the IRS losing hard drives going amok. Six or seven people, it happens to. I heard a guy yesterday on the radio talk about, and this guy is a technical guru of computers, and he said the odds of six to seven different people in a company, all their hard drives going bad at simultaneously, is virtually impossible to happen. The statistical numbers aren't even there.
Well, my dog ate my outline today, so I'm not going to say anything.
Well, be sure, Kevin, that if we go to file our tax returns and we have the dog eat the tax return, do you think they'll let us off on that?
I hear you. You know, this is two IRS commissioners in a row that are just out of control. I mean, Tim Geithner blatantly cheated on his taxes, and he still gets to be commissioner of the IRS. I mean, what sort of state are we in?
Well,
here?
In his case, wasn't ignorance the real defense for him?
You and your lawyer terms.
I always thought that ignorance was not an excuse if you broke the law.
Even if you happen to be, like part of the, what was he? Wasn't he with the big bank or something? What was his position? He was like Mr. Tax Guy.
New York something or other bank. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the Federal Reserve. Yeah. Or something.
Federal Reserve.
Yeah, yeah. There we go. Yeah. And the thing is what he was doing, I mean, I have clients that are bending over backwards to meet the letter of the law with household employees. And it's not fun. And it's taxes, and there's not a whole lot you can do about it. But they're doing it because it's what you have to do. And then to have somebody like that skirt it and then claim ignorance.
I'm sure he didn't know any good CPAs.
No.
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 Yeah, well, the fact is, it's amazing to me that we would have a person put in that kind of authority that did blatantly break our tax laws.
Yeah.
And, for most of us out there, I think the majority of people are hardworking, pay your taxes, pay it on time. You don't try to cheat on your taxes. I mean, I know there's people that probably do, and I know there's people that haven't filed taxes in a long, long time. I don't know why they don't really go after those people. It's amazing to me that they don't. But it's kind of crazy what's going on in this country. When you have the IRS losing emails, having hard drives go, you know, it's almost like we have the Pravda News Network of all the newspapers. I read the, and I'm going to actually cancel my paper because I got so mad reading the newspaper because I wanted to call them. In fact, I am going to call them, and I would encourage you to call your local paper or your local news stations, because I've called the radio stations and I've talked to the station managers, and they tell me they can't put the story on about the IRS, so they'll lose their jobs. Now, there's something wrong in America when you have a let's just put it this way. You want to call them NBC? I would call NBC nothing but communism. I'd call ABC. Well, I guess I better be careful here. But anyway, the fact is, you know, we have a news network in this country that is basically holding down the truth and not telling the truth. And what they do is they just don't tell the story. And many, many people, although the polls now, there's something like 76% of the people who have been taking the polls on the IRS believe that the IRS is lying. They're blatantly lying. Now, I got to tell you, as Ron White says, you can't fix stupid, but the other 24% have to be frickin' idiots. Because if you destroy six hard drives, and you stand up and you take the Fifth Amendment, listen, the only reason that lady took the Fifth Amendment is she knows she's guilty of something. That's the fact. And what really upsets me, and I have been calling my senators and my congressmen, and I got to tell you something, I'm mad as heck about them. Because I want that lady in jail. I want her pension taken away. She works for you and me, the taxpayer. And if she did something outrageous, what she did, going after people because of their political beliefs or their whatever it is, it doesn't matter. If we don't have a fair IRS, we're all screwed. The one place, and I don't care if you're a liberal, if you're a conservative, I consider myself an independent. I am conservative, but I consider myself an independent because I don't like either party. But the fact is, whatever you are, you ought to be totally against the IRS being crooked. If there's one place in America that's got to be a fair, level playing field, it's got to be the IRS. If it's not the IRS, well, it's got to be the IRS. It's got to be the criminal justice system, too. I mean, we have to have fairness in both those two systems. But if you don't have that, you have chaos in the country, and this needs to be it and controlled. And I could tell you, every American citizen needs to pick up the phone, call your local news station, ask them why they're not talking about the IRS problem, and you ought to be picking up the phone and calling your senator or congressman. And listen, I will be happy if Earl Blumenauer or any of those guys want to call and talk to us on the show. Hey, here's our number. If you're out there, you want to talk about this and give me one good reason why you're not just mad as hell and you're not defending all your constituents and making sure that the IRS is fair, give us a call, 503-417-7626, 503-417-7626. And I'd really like to talk to Ron White, and I'd be more than happy to spend a half hour talking to Ron White. And I got a lot of questions to ask him since he's been in office a long, long time. Why he's been in office so long and allowed the national debt to go crazy like it has, and why he's allowed the IRS to continue to get away with this. This is crazy. He went ballistic on NSA, and he should have, and I admire him for doing it. But now I want to see where he is on this. Why aren't he stepping up to the plate and saying, hey, guys, we've got to make this a fair system. If it's not a fair system, we got a problem. We got a big, big problem in this country. And it's got to get resolved. And you know what? The only way we're going to resolve it is if you and I pick up the phone, call your congressman, call your senator. And I know it's frustrating because it doesn't seem like you ever get results from them. But I'll tell you what, the first time they lose an election, they do get a totally different thing. So I think it's time we get rid of any incumbent, kick them out, get new people in there, give new people an opportunity.
You're a man of action, Chuck.
Absolutely. I believe in taking action. Well, listen, if you got a question, you want to talk about investing, you want to talk about the IRS, you want to talk about taxes, you want to talk about law, we're your place to call. Give us a call, 800-990-0750, or toll-free, 503-417-7626. And, boy, it's great to be in living in a country that's free. We'll be right back with Carl's comments. Thank you very much for listening.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation, or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com. Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepson. I'm going to do Carl's comments, but and I'm glad that if you've listened to the first part of our show, that you're all warmed up and ready to go. And I wish that I could tell you that I had anything that exciting to talk about. But actually, today I just usually talk about something that has come up in my practice in the week before. And one of the things that comes up quite often is what we call a small estate. And this is a kind of a what I would call a summary or shortened version of the standard probate. And I just wanted to talk a little bit about it because I think it's misunderstood by a lot of people. And a small estate is designed to allow you to do the same thing that you would do in a probate, but in a much shorter and simpler fashion and less expensive fashion if there are certain requirements that are met before doing so. And it can be a very useful tool. It's not without its problems as well. And in many cases, the full probate is probably a better course, but it is useful in many situations. So I thought I'd just discuss the kind of the what it is and how it works and that sort of thing for a little while. And if you have any questions along the way, please feel free to give us a call at 503-417-7626 or toll-free 800-990-0750. So a small estate, what is it? Small estate is when somebody dies and their personal property is, that means cash and cars and, boats or whatever they have, are less, a fair market value of less than $75,000 and real property in a value of less than $200,000. And I understand we have a caller on the line.
Yes, we've got Marjorie on the line. Marjorie, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, and you have a question?
I do. I was just wondering, I was hoping to get on when Harry Danner, a representative, you said every third Saturday. But anyway, I don't get his newsletter, but I was just wondering, he was thinking there might be kind of a bust in this year, and I was just wondering what the latest predictions were from him.
Well, I think and Marjorie, that's a great question, and we will have Harry actually on the show the third Saturday in July, and you can certainly call in and would want you to call in, and if you want to get a copy of the book, call my office and I'll give you a copy of the book. But he's been predicting for a long time that we're going to have a correction in the market. But he's been saying it's going to be once we hit the all-time highs. And when we bust through, Like, for example, on the S&P, I think one of the numbers we've been looking at from the stuff I've been getting from Harry is when we bust through 2,000. Now, we haven't quite hit that yet, but when we break through 2,000, that's when he says you want to be cognizant that we're going to have a step back. And normally what happens is you have a little bit of a pullback, and then it jumps back up, and then bam. And so, you know, obviously nobody can predict it, but Harry has been saying this for some time, and that would put the S&P at about 2,000. And looking at the Dow Jones here, we're probably talking about when it hits about 18. So those are kind of the benchmarks I've seen on the graphs and stuff that he's put out. And he thinks there's a little bit of growth left in the markets, but we're going to have a step back, and there's going to be something to cause that. But, you know, the economy has not been as robust as people want it to be. And that's why we recommend, to our clients that you have to have a certain amount of your portfolio in a preservation of principal portfolio in a defensive strategy. Because if you don't have some money in a defensive strategy, when this thing hits, you're going to have a 5 to 7 recovery period of time. And that's where people really get killed, people who are retired. People who are retired can't stand to have 4 to 5.5 years of their money making no money. And if you I can clearly show you from 99 to 2006, 2007, there was a period of time there where people made no money for 4.5 to 5 years. And the same thing happened after 2008 to about 2013. Most portfolios in mutual funds did not make any money for 4.5 years. If you're retired and you're drawing money out, you can't afford that. You can't do it. And Harry's been saying for some time, we're going to have this correction in the market. And he talks about the fact that we've had two already in this century, major dips. And the third one is usually deeper and longer for recovery.
Yes, well, I just like to, find out from you how to preserve it. And when there's a bust, and I need to actually call for a consultation. I dropped in your office yesterday and got your graph of what you do.
Okay, well, then you know exactly what I'm talking about, and I thought that's who you were. Did you get good reception out there?
Do you know what? There's something, I don't know if it's in our neighborhood. I heard that, between Scappers and St. Helens, there's a lot of staticky. We can't not get most stations. I was listening to you today on the computer. I don't know what's going on. I'm going to try to call some stations and just see and check with other people in the community. It could just be our house, but I don't know.
Yeah, I've not heard that before out there, but I know sometimes in even in Vancouver, when I'm driving around, some of the stations I can't get as good as I can when I'm right in Portland. But Marjorie, thank you very much for calling. It was nice meeting you, and hope to see you again.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye. That was a very nice call.
Yeah, nice call. So just to recap just a little bit to catch us back up to speed, we're talking about small estates. And a small estate is an estate where the personal property of the decedent is valued at fair market value at less than $75,000 and or real estate of $200,000 or less. Now, one of the important things you have to know here is that that is not the net equity value. It is the fair market value as though you sold it on the market. So, a lot of times people say, well, I've got this piece of property, but the equity is only $198,000. And you're saying, yeah, well, but the fair market's, like 300 or something. That is not qualifying for a small estate. So that's an interesting problem. Now, the problem is that nobody really has a way to check that. You put in the values. But the problem with that is it could give you some trouble with title companies and things like that later on if you're trying to sell a property. So if your property's really close to 200 or more, don't do the small estate. Go ahead and do the full estate.
So, Carl, would that be the net value
the gross value?
The gross value. So it's not, matter if that you have a mortgage
right.
on it.
Yeah, you forget the mortgage, and it's the list price that a realtor would generally sell it for or thereabouts. So, or what it might sell for.
So is this a real property of 200,000 plus
75,000 in personal property.
Okay.
Yeah, same thing. So if you had a $90,000 car, but you had a $50,000, I don't know who has those, but and you had a $50,000 loan on it. Well, even though that was net under the 75, it still wouldn't count for the personal property because the fair market value would be the, well, of course, on depreciation, it would probably be 2,500. So you wouldn't want to be able to do that. But nonetheless, it is the net value or the fair market value, not the net value or the equity value. So anyway, so who can file these things? Typically heirs. Heirs are people who would take property from the decedent if there were no will at all, called intestate succession, or devisees. Devisees are people who are named in a will who take property from the estate. And then sometimes under certain circumstances, some kinds of creditors can file a small estate. They want to get paid and they have no way to get to the assets that exist and they're under the $275,000 thing. When can it be filed? It must be filed no earlier than 30 days after the date of death. So you can't just run out and file this thing. It's amazing how many people, when somebody dies, and I know they want to do stuff, but they want to do everything. And that really isn't necessary and it really isn't productive generally. And in the case of a small estate, you can't do it. And the one thing is that there's no personal representative in a small estate as there is in a full probate. The person is called either the claiming successor or, probably more technically correct, the affiant or affiant, depending on how you want to pronounce that, the person who signs the affidavit. And the process is really quite easy. You file what's called a small estate affidavit. And the small estate affidavit has some basic information about the decedent, you know, date of death and things like that. It says it requires you to put a statement that says that no petition for probate has been filed. It lists the heirs and it lists the devisees. It lists the property that is sought to be administered and estimated value of that property. And then it also is supposed to list any known creditors. The affidavit has to then be mailed out to certain noticed people, creditors, heirs, devisees, and the state of Oregon. And here's where this can become a little dicey, because I can't tell you how many times people have come to me and I will ask them the question. I'll say, so did mom or dad have any Medicaid or any government assistance given to them as they were, you know, while they were sick or what? And they'll almost invariably say, oh, no, there was never anything like that. Well, and then surprisingly, the reason that you have to have a legal requirement to send the affidavit to the state of Oregon is because one of the agencies is the Oregon Health Authority and the other one's Department of Human Services. And they're the ones that administer those programs where they want their money back. And so you send this claim in or you send the small estate affidavit and it goes to them. And about, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks later, you get this claim back that says, oh, gosh, guess what? You owe $90,000 or something. You know, well, all of a sudden, surprise, surprise. So one of the key things is that there's a 4-month period of time during which you have to wait until you distribute the assets of the small estate, just like a probate. And the reason for that is that it gives the state of Oregon and other creditors time to file claims. If you don't do that, if you just go right out and distribute the money, if you say, oh, don't worry about it, you know, and I've had clients do this that say, well, I'm not worried about it, so I'm going to distribute the money now. And I say, well, you know, you kind of do so at your own risk. I mean, the risk is that there's a creditor out there, and if there is, guess who they're going to come after? They're going to come after the person who signed the affidavit, and they're going to be personally responsible for that. Now, that person can go out and try to recover the money that he's distributed to other people, but good luck with that. I mean, it's going to be a real challenge. So anyway, it's best to wait the 4 months. When the affiant gets the affidavit, he gets to go and collect all of the property. And this becomes a real problem when it's financial institutions, because financial institutions, number one, they are very wary, I will say, and they are also ignorant. And that is, you go in with a small estate affidavit and they'll give you all sorts of hassle as to why you can't get the money. And then they blame the lawyer who put together the affidavit, and they should be blaming the bank because they're supposed to do it. The law says they're supposed to do it. But if the bank says they're not going to do it, well, guess what? They're probably not going to do it. And there is a procedure under the law that allows the affiant to actually go to court and compel the bank to give you the money. On occasion, I've actually had to threaten to do that usually because there is a bank manager or you know, loan officer or whoever it is that's dealing with the client who is ignorant of it. And but I've gone so far as where we had a Medicaid claim and submitted the affidavit to the bank, and the bank refused to turn over the money. And we knew there was a Medicaid claim. And so we wrote to the Medicaid people and we said, hey, you know, this is what's happening. And they wrote them a letter and they said, look out, we're coming after you, bank, unless you do this. And they said, we're still not doing it. And we said, well, okay. So I had to threaten to sue them. And ultimately, I got a couple days later, I got a check in the mail, which we promptly forwarded it on to the Medicaid people. But nonetheless, I mean, it was pretty kind of crazy. So I would, if there was one request I would ask of banks is to get your in-house counsel, your lawyers, to give a presentation or develop a manual on how small probate works and how trusts work and how probate works. And get your people up to speed so that you're not sending, because it just makes people so mad. They're already upset about somebody dying. And then to get jerked around just because you don't know what the law is not very much fun. So anyway, that's my admonition for the day.
I thought for sure you were going to say tell the banks to get their head out of the clouds and get down with and help people instead of
clouds.
Stonewalling them.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
That's not happening.
Anyway, yeah. So that's really basically it. After the 4 months, the affiant, assuming nothing bad happens and nobody claims the money, they can then distribute the money or the property to whoever's supposed to get it. And so it can be a useful tool. It is somewhat challenging because, like I said, if it turns out that there are troubles, then the procedures that are involved in the small estate are not as robust or as, full of due process as the full probate process. So I only recommend it when we're pretty sure that nothing bad is going to happen and all we're doing is, you know, maybe there's one bank account or something like that, or there's some vacant lot that's, you know, worth 50 grand and it's not, and there's no encumbrance and there's no issues to do anything with it. But some people like to save the money, although, quite frankly, I used to say, oh, well, it's going to be a lot cheaper. But in recent times, I found that so many of these things have hair on them that the expense of doing it, that's like snakes in your drawer, you know. Oh. Yeah.
Okay. Well, with that, we're going to go right to the tax investigator. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Give us a call if you got a question, 503-417-7626. Toll free, 800-990-0750, Investing Simplified.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over 3 decades, and its 9 attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Give us a call, 503-417-7626 or 800-990-0750. And those were two rousing segments. Definitely going to be hard to follow those up. But today on the Tax Investigator, we will try. And what we have today is some very particular tax planning strategies for your brokerage account. You may have gains, you may have losses, you may have capital loss carryforwards, you may have a certain perspective on the market that would influence how you're going to invest. And these are some very particular ways that you might find yourself looking at this situation or in these situations and could benefit from. And I would say off the top of my head that you probably are not going to be getting these from your big box tax prep stores or even your mom and pop CPA who are just turning out tax return tax prep. This is good planning. And this is where you get your bang for your buck. So first off, say you have, and I should say, actually, first off, before I go into point number one here, is any examples I use that may have a particular security or investment strategy, I'm not condoning that's something that you should do. But if you do it, these are the tax ramifications and potential benefits. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because Chuck probably has an idea on whether you should do some of these things or not. But first off...
But you do promise that... No, never mind.
That's right. I guarantee... No. So first off, say you... We'll start off easy here. Say you have some appreciated stock. You're a well-to-do taxpayer. You maybe have kids. One thing you can do with some appreciated stock or dividend-paying stock is gift that security to your child. Now, there are some certain rules to follow to make sure that the kiddie tax doesn't kick in, which basically negates any tax benefit there. But they're not difficult to interpret or apply, so you know whether you fit this situation or not. But if you gift your appreciated security or your dividend-paying stock to your child would be recognized. They could sell that security and pay potentially 0% long-term capital gains rates or 0% on the dividends also, so they would be paying tax in a lower bracket than you. So that's not a bad scenario to look at.
So your basis, the donor's basis would maybe be quite low, but they give it to them and
the kid keeps the same low basis.
Yeah.
The kid sells the stock, but they're in a low tax bracket.
Oh, I see.
But the point here is that the gain does go with the gift.
It does.
Yeah. So what you're doing is you're giving it to somebody in a lower tax bracket.
That's right.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly right. Now this is I think an interesting thing to mull over and see how you could point number two, see how it maybe. Maybe you messed up some planning in the past, or how you could use this in the future. But say you have a capital loss carry forward. You've lost some money in the market due to one of our infamous crashes, and you've got a capital loss carry forward. Typically, you've heard that you should sell when you have a gain. You should sell your stock. You're locking in your gain. You should also sell some corresponding losses to offset that gain and make yourself tax neutral. And typically that's fine. But what if you're in the 0% tax, you're in the 15%, 10 or 15% federal tax bracket, and you're getting 0% capital gains rates? Why would you want to utilize your capital loss carry forward against 0%? Why would you want to sell loser stocks and take that loss off the table against 0%? It needs to be a big gain, or it needs to be short-term capital gains that are subject to ordinary income tax rates. That's when you want to utilize your capital loss carryforward, is against short-term capital gains if possible. So it doesn't always work out that you want to, dot all these I's and cross these T's, but it could be very significant tax savings. You know, I mean, you could just be wasting your capital losses.
That's one of the things which you don't know can hurt you. And if you don't have a tax person who's keeping you aware of that, or your advisors and keeping you aware of that, that's a really costly mistake.
Exactly. Number three, if you have large capital losses, we're talking, and there's some clients that did that lost, when the market
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Exactly. Why would you do a long term investment in a 529 plan in that case when you could? Why would you lock it down, be subject to all those rules when you have all of these large capital losses that you may not be able to utilize? So that would be a case where you don't want to do a 529 and you would just get your regular gains through a regular brokerage account and utilize those losses. So use these tax-deferred plans wisely and to your benefit, and don't always just jump into them. Now, the 529 is if you're just going to be contributing and in a couple of weeks pulling it back out to get the benefit on the Oregon tax return, that's a nice little game to garner yourself, you know, about $400 or so. But that would be the only scenario I could see. If you have appreciated securities and you're charitably minded, remember to gift that security to charity, because you don't have to recognize the gain in income and you get the full fair market value deduction on your tax return. If it's a security with a loss, you sell it. You don't gift it to charity. You sell it first, and then you gift the cash to charity so that you get to keep the capital loss. And that's so.
And look, do you get the charitable deduction too?
That's right.
Yeah, because you turned it into cash, so you get a charitable deduction plus carryover loss.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's called a double dip.
Exactly. Good. Yep.
Yep. So you double dipper.
Yeah. And we've talked about point number four here, or five before, sale losses, and that's where you buy or sell buy a security, a position 30 days before or after the time that you sell the same position for a loss. One thing people might not know is that also includes December activity that would happen the following year. So it does not just stop December 31st. It is a 30 days before and after, and it does carry into the...
Yeah, and it only applies to losses, not the gains.
That's right.
Because, I mean, you know, one of the strategies we've been talking about on this show, and I've been telling people for the last year, you need to be, if you have individual stocks in your portfolio, you need to be putting stop losses in. You need to be moving it up with the market, because we think there is going to be a correction in the market. This is a great opportunity to make a ton of money. You move your stop loss up all the time as the market goes up, and then when it crashes, and that stock, let's just take a stock, any stock, say it was $80 a share, and your cost basis is $20. Now you're going to have a $60 capital gain. Okay, you're going to pay some taxes. So what? Isn't it better to pay taxes than to have that $80 stock drop down to $40 and lose $40? I'd much rather pay tax on $60 than have to lose $40.
That's right. The tax.
Okay. And so if, you know, because we're never going to have 100% tax, I hope. But right now we don't. So taking that stop loss, you can turn right around, sell that stock for $80 a share on a stop loss. The market drops down to 40. Turn around and rebuy that. And if you really think that stock is great for long term, hey, take the whole $80. Now you just doubled your shares. What a great investment.
I like how you're thinking. Very good. Yeah. Very good. So to avoid the wash sale rules, what if you were to, as a joint couple, what if you were to married filing separate instead of filing jointly? In other words, the couple has a security and it's in the husband's name, and you've got the wash loss rules kicking in. What if they were, husband and wife, were to file separate? And she were to rebuy within the 30-day period? Does that avoid the wash loss rules?
So he sells, she buys.
Exactly. Rebuys the position.
And they're filing separately.
Yes.
This is a trick question.
Yeah,
it is
a trick question, but I don't think they would.
I think my answer is I'm not sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's publication 550 from the IRS says the wash rules kick in. However, that is the only basis for that. There is no regulation. There's no code. There's no court case.
Oh, it's just in the pub?
You just got excited about that. Well, that's right. Because the pub...
That's litigate and prosper waiting to happen.
Exactly. So that's playing with fire, if you want. That's the IRS's position. There is no basis for it at this point. And what if you were to do the same thing, the husband or the taxpayer unit sells, and what if they use an IRA to rebuy the position? Do the wash loss rules kick in? Same answer.
I'm less comfortable with that
exactly.
one.
Exactly. The IRS says yes, but again, there's an archaic 1933 decision, and it's based on a taxable trust, not an IRA. So they're really, if you really want to not sleep at night, go forward on this. So we'll move on past the wash. Oh, and one small thing is, if you do rebuy it with your IRA. The IRS also says you don't get the step up in basis for that loss. So you actually just lose that loss. So it's a very, very bad scenario.
I have to give him a little disclaimer here, because I totally am against owning individual stocks in your IRA, because I think it is insane to buy an investment that you can take tax losses on and put it in your IRA, because I got news for you. There is no loss in there.
That's right.
You can't write it off. So it's just almost, it kind of drives me nuts when I see all these people that got these stocks in there and they think this is such a great deal. And in fact, some clients I have, when they've taken their RMD, what we started doing is, if they have a lot of stocks in there, we'll take their RMD in stock value and take it out, have them pay the tax on it, and then that becomes their cost basis on the stock, because they lost all the advantages of owning a stock by putting in an IRA.
That's right. So moving on to our second to the last point. If you consider yourself a wheeler dealer, you're involved in a lot of securities, you do a lot of trading, maybe you think you rise to the level of what the IRS calls a day trader. And so I wanted to define very briefly what the benefits of a day trader are and how you obtain day trader status. And this will be very brief, but it should let you know you are not a day trader. So with that, the benefits of being a day trader is you can, number one, make what's called a mark-to-market election, and that's where at the end of the year, your whole portfolio is considered treated as sold on December 31st, and you recognize all your gains and losses, and on January 1st, you get your basis is the fair market value, and you pick up from there again. Basically, they recognize all your gains and losses. That could be a good thing. And it's an election that you make year by year. Number two is you don't have the $3,000 capital loss limitation that you can take each year. You get an unlimited amount of loss. The wash sale rules don't apply. And you get to take your business expenses. So not a bad thing if you fit the profile. But what is a day trader? And this is defined in the K case. And I have to say, anytime I cite a court case, Carl licks his lips.
Yeah,
it unnerves me a little.
It's salivation, kind of a Pavlov thing.
Exactly. But this is the case of Mr. K, who had over 300 transactions in a year. His gross sales were over $20 million and up to 6 transactions in one day. And yet the court said you do not rise to the level of a day trader. So you specifically have to be trading in the daily fluctuations of a stock, and that's what they're going to be looking for. So it's not a easy level to rise to. And then lastly, Chuck, one of the drawbacks to holding a security long term is, the longer you hold something, the greater risk that something could go wrong, which is why a 30-year mortgage has a higher interest rate than a 15-year mortgage. There's just a little less risk to the bank. So, but then you have the tax law that benefits holding things long term as opposed to short term. So you kind of have two conflicting
But their definition is a little shorter than 30 years.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. Yeah. So what's how can you invest short term but still get more favorable tax rates, maybe some long term tax rates or something close to it? Well, one of the popular ways that people do some short term investing is taking advantage of broad stock market movements by trading in exchange traded funds such as QQQ or SPY, which follow the NASDAQ, the Standard and Poor. So on and so forth. Well, there's something called a section, and you can impress your friends with this one. You can tell them you're looking into Section 1256 contracts, which basically is it's a tax-favored way to invest in these exchange-traded funds where 60% of the gains are treated as long-term capital gains and 40% of it, by default, are treated as short-term capital gains taxed at your ordinary rate. And so it goes 60-40 on these. And it's a Section 1256. It's a the exact name is a exchange-traded fund. What is it? A stock index option. There we go. Stock index option. And it can be anywhere from trading an exchange following a market like the NASDAQ, or it can be in gold, it can be in silver. They have various ones that follow this. But maybe worth looking into where if you think the market is kind of volatile and you don't want a long-term holding period, but you still want some favorable tax rates. So it's not a bad way to go. There are some rules applied to it, but they're not too punitive. So anyway, just some things to consider.
Well, you know, we always like to say to our clients, it's not what you gross, it's what you net. And so don't taxes. Gross me out, net me, yep. Because it's what your net income is. And a lot of people get lost in that in investing, and they look at the, you know, well, I'm going to make this, but you got to make it first, and then you got to be able to keep it. So we're going to come right back with the Knowledge Trust. If you got a question for any of us, give us a call. And the numbers are toll-free, 990-0750 or 503-417-7626. We'll be right back with the Knowledge Trust.
Say goodnight to me.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
What you don't know can hurt you. Get that investing question or that legal question or even a tax question answered now. Call the Knowledge Trust at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's Chuck, Carl, and Kevin, the Knowledge Trust.
My name is Money.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. I thought we'd just add a little humor to the show, and then I love that song, My Name is Money. If you've never heard it, check it out on YouTube. There's a great YouTube on that. And if you're a country western fan like I am, there's a lot of cameo appearances of big country people in that. But that's a great little video. Listen, you're listening to Investing Simplified, and this is the time we talk about the Knowledge Trust, where we kind of open up the door, and I kind of wanted to give a little report. I gave a little teaser that I was going to talk about this at the end, but for any of you that are senior citizens, you may from time to time get stuff from an organization called the Senior Citizens League. They're out of Texas, and they are for the defending your earned benefits that you've actually paid into Social Security. And I can't think of who said it, but somebody once said that if you tell a lie over and over again, eventually people start believing it. And unfortunately, if you have a court that goes along with that to make it fact, then that is even worse. And I'm talking about the money you and I pay into Social Security. Since I've been working, I've had to pay into Social Security. My employers had to match that. Now I am an employer, so I have to match it too. But so you pay double, but employers match your Social Security benefit, and any employer that hires anybody obviously calculates the cost of Social Security into the cost of hiring an employee. If you don't, you're an idiot. And so, you know, because you have to figure your expenses. The fact is, that money really isn't ours. And we kind of looked this up. I had Carl check it out on the Supreme Court, the law here that kind of did this. But I received this letter from this group, and copies of this went to my two esteemed senators in Washington, and also to our representative in the district that I'm in. And the thing I want to say about this is, this letter that they wrote, it said, "Dear friend, we retained a well-regarded law firm to study the U.S.-Mexico Social Security Totalization Agreement and tell us what, if anything, it would mean to Social Security recipients when it is signed. Now, if you are near Social Security, or you're drawing Social Security, or you're paying into Social Security, this ought to make your blood boil. Here is what they told us, and I think you'll be shocked, as I was. They believe that if the agreement goes into effect, the millions of Mexican citizens who will become eligible for Social Security benefits may have a far stronger claim to benefits and protection against cuts than U.S. citizens. This will happen because a well-known U.S. Supreme Court ruling, known as Fleming versus Nestor, makes it clear that Congress can cut or change Social Security benefits you and I receive at any time, and that Americans do not have a right." Now, you don't have a right. Very important. You do not have a right to Social Security benefits. "No matter what Congress or Social Security Administration may have promised in the past, how much you have paid in, or how much you have, you will be hurt by the cuts. You have no rights. However, the promise to pay benefits made in the agreement with Mexico will be protected because they are made in a legally enforceable international agreement. This means that the millions of Mexican citizens and dependents who are covered under the agreement will have almost bulletproof protection against Social Security cuts and changes such as those that are being discussed in Washington. Please read the enclosed letter and act now and help us stop this outrageous abuse of public trust." I got to tell you something. If you're a senior and you don't pick up the phone and call your senator, your representative, and demand that they change the law to protect us more than they do illegal aliens, you are an idiot. I got to tell you something. This is your money. They're stealing your money. And if you're going to allow these people to steal your money over and over again, you got to take a look in the mirror and say, who is at fault? We are. We cannot let these people do this to us. It's your money. If somebody came up and took your money out of your bank, would you be furious? Well, they've been doing it to you for 40 years. So you're listening to Investing Simplified. We hope to hear you next week. By the way, Carl, how does somebody get a hold of you?
503-255-8795 or warrenallen.com.
And you can reach us at bakercolson.com or 503-666-5569.
And you can reach me at 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE on the web at pfgwm.com. Don't forget, the third Saturday of the month, we will have Harry Dent in July. Will be our guest. It'll be an exciting time because I think as the markets move up, kind of pertaining to Marjorie's call here, I think it'll be a very exciting call at that time. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great 4th of July. Be safe out there, but have a good time and enjoy this great country that we live in. Thank you all very much.